to make an intentional decision to not police Black people in the ways that we show up, that's something that is intentional. And it's also giving a lot of grace, recognizing that we do have trauma upon trauma upon trauma that is piled on, coming from so many different places. It's so layered. There's so many levels to it.
So what is it that you love about being Black?
That's a great question, Nanny Keena. I love being Black because I'm different from everybody else. And the second reason, because Black people can do anything they set their minds to.
What I like about being Black is just freaking amazing. We are amazing.
Every day is a good day for breathing.
My favorite part about being Black is the originality.
I love being Black because I can put my hair into different shapes and sizes, and nobody can ever tell me how my hair can be.
I do like the food.
When people say Black girl magic, that's for real. That ain't just because we just want to say that. It's real. We magic.
We are so unique in everything that we know.
Go ahead, say it. Please say Black.
Listen to my nanny podcast.
Please say Black.
Please say Black.
Please stay Black.
Please say Black.
As I always was Black.
Okay, y'all. So I am so excited. One of my favorite humans in the entire world, my sister Tina, from Legacy Trips, from Speaking of Racism, from Black Women Surfing. I mean, there is not a thing that Tina does that does not amplify, explode, and bring light to Black liberation. Like, everything this sister does is so powerful. So Tina, welcome to the Please Say Black podcast.
Thank you. I just love you. And thank you for those kind words. That means a lot. Thank you.
You know, what's interesting is when I was thinking about how I was going to introduce you, I am learning how to not lead with the resume. We've been taught that, right? Like, lead with the credentials. And I'm just like, there's so much stuff that we do that just replicates supremacy culture. So why yes. not lead with why this person matters, right? So one of the things I want my listeners to know is, in my own kind of journey to decolonize my life, like, Tina is an answer I didn't know I needed. As a Black woman who's trying to get free of a lot of violent systems, I didn't realize that I needed the opposite of Claire Huxtable in my life, right? Because I have a lot of Claire Huxtables. We've seen it. The respectability politic. We've seen the Black excellence model. We've seen it. And what we don't have in our culture are Tinas, right? Mm-hmm. Smart, powerful boss women who are like, I don't give a F. And how we have interpreted that energy really has been to disregard it. And so I just want to encourage you all, in the show notes, you're going to get links to all the dope shit Tina does. But really think about that as we start to process what our Blackness means in a full way. Get you some mentors who will show you in real life how to move in a way that constantly brings liberation into the space. So that's what we're talking about today. But before we have that conversation, Tina, is there anything you want the people to know about your work, your platforms? Like, if you had to introduce yourself, how would you do that?
In this moment, I would have said exactly what you said. I love that. I love that you brought in that I'm a surfer. I just want to announce that to everyone who doesn't know. That's like my most recent proud accomplishment, is that after my second lesson surfing here in Jaco, Costa Rica, I have some amazing pictures. And we were just talking before we started this episode about what those pictures convey. So it's my business card right now. Like, it's my life card, fuck business card. It's how I want to be seen. And I think that it's a visual image of how I live my life, which is focusing on Black joy, living Black joy and Black liberation. It's prioritizing my peace and my pleasure. That's what I want. That's the legacy I want to leave.
It's time for the
now. Okay, Tina, gotta ask you, what is the blackest thing you've done recently? The blackest thing.
Ignore this old white dude this morning. So I'll set this up because it's funny. I woke up when I got the question, like, already starting.
The universe provided.
Yes, provided the illustration of what of the most unapologetically black thing I did recently. So I wake up this morning early. It's 5:30 in the morning here in Atenas, Costa Rica, which is where I currently reside. I decide I'm going to go out on a walk, and that this walk is going to take me to my friend Amina's house. Shout out to Amina with Atlanta Tantra, and of the, I'm giving you notes, my bad, but she is also one of the sex experts on Netflix's series, Sex, Love, and Goop. Okay, anyway, I was going to go to her house and see her. I arrive, I'm walking. It was a beautiful morning, beautiful sunrise. I'm watching the sun come up over the mountains, and it's just ridiculously beautiful. I get to her subdivision, and it's gated. And the gentlemen at the gate know me. I've been many times, they know me. So I say, buenos dias, hola, right? And he sees it's me, opens the gate and lets me enter. There is an older white man standing there, and he goes, wait a minute, do you live here? I said, good morning, my friends live here. They do? Where? I said, up the street. And I kept walking.
Sir? What? What?
Right,
do
already.
Here?
Listen, the joy that I got from, and I recognize I did not even have to give him an answer. I did not have to say what I said at all. But I did also recognize that I'm feeling really good in this moment, and I'm not going to allow him to disrupt my feeling good. So I'm gonna choose, and I didn't choose violence in this moment, because sometimes I do choose that. And that's absolutely fine if I was to choose that. I didn't. I began with, good morning. My friends live here. And when he then continued to ask, well, where? And I said, up the street. He goes, well, I obviously know up the street. And I put my earphones back in, and I just kept walking. And I continued singing my songs and enjoying my morning.
You continue to mind your own black business.
Mind my own black business. And that was the blackest thing I've done recently, being unapologetically black.
Now, this is going to be the only time we talk about white people this whole episode, y'all, but this makes me want to tell you a story that happened to me in 2020. When I went to the grocery store, I went to the butcher's block or whatever, and this older white woman, like, approached me. And I mean, you know, we're wearing masks, so I don't see her whole full face, but she said something like, something, the cost of blah, blah, blah. You know, small talk, whatever. That wasn't the problem. And I responded to whatever that was. And then I physically walked away from her, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the older white woman followed me. And I'm like, well, I mean, like, I walked away, you know? Like,
I obviously don't want to engage in conversation.
I don't want to engage. Like, I gave you the one thing, but why are you following me? So then she came, you know, followed me, and then she started talking again. Tina, I looked at her, and that's it. And then I turned my head back around. And even though I couldn't see the bottom part of her face, I saw the shock. Like, in my, like, it's like she couldn't comprehend. She's doing all the social niceties. And you know, this is 2020. So maybe she was like, look at me starting racism. Who knows? But I just refused. And I could just tell she was just like, what do you mean she isn't gonna, the color is not gonna talk to me in the grocery store? And so that kind of, I don't gotta talk to you. I think a lot of white people don't understand it. They're just like, huh, what? Like,
right.
You owe me answers, black person.
And I'm over here in a whole ass different country. Like, he definitely,
and they still got that posture of like,
still got it.
But that's what happens when colonial projects tell you could be the police of the world.
this is what happens. This is what happens when you take your colonized ass out of the most colonized place and put it somewhere else. You still don't be colonized. You still don't think that you are the colonized. Like, that's still how you move. That's still your energy. And I was here to tell them, yeah, not today.
I mean, I love that you said that, Tina, because of someone who, and I'm going to turn this back to you, but again, I feel like I had this amazing conversation with hopefully someone who's going to be a guest on the podcast, so I won't say their name, but they're a historian, right? A lot of the work they do is talking about Black labor specific, both enslaved labor and freedmen labor, when it comes to building this country. So like I tell people all the time, Black people built the Capitol not once, but twice for free. White House, right? So the shit that people are saying is theirs, I'm always, but actually, you know how when you know, I know growing up, it was like a big thing, like Black people owning stuff. So you're like, you better get your feet off my table, off my couch, off, you know? So that's how I feel about most of the monuments in this country. That's our house. we built that. But I understand why it's touch and go for so many of us who are like, I don't want to know another thing about enslavement, or I don't want to know another thing about Jim Crow. I get that. But what has happened for me, part of my Black liberation has been knowing those things have made me have this posture demand. It was not until I learned some of this history that I was like, oh, hell no, y'all got us effed up. You know, it's like once you know your power, and more importantly, once you know what's owed to you, then that helps even create more, it creates more places where you can say, I can stand up strong in this. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we can joke about this, but if you are a Black kid who grows up in K through 12 education, you know, and it's like you go from seeing enslaved folks to like MLK in a book with nothing else in between, you don't know how amazing and beautiful and powerful we are. And so I do think that part of our liberatory, like the actions we make towards liberation, include reckoning with some of the bad stuff so that it can help you really, like, this is what it is. You know what I'm saying? At least that's the energy I have. So when I meet a white person, I have write me a check energy every day.
Yes.
Because yes. I know.
And I think that's important for us to keep close to our hearts, that these are the harsh realities that our ancestors went through. And so as it informs my liberatory practice, I think about, I have to go get this joy. I have to be in my peace and my pleasure because my ancestors didn't get free so I could then be enslaved in other ways.
Working on Jeff Bezos' plantation.
Oh, right.
Listen, and I have to stop talking. See, this is what I mean. But I was this, how do young people say this year is old? However they say it. When I realized that a plant, you know, when people used to say I'm working at the plant, that was short for plantation. I'm just like, this shit is everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like the modern conceptualization of work, mm-hmm. that is violent for all people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your social or racial identity is. It's a scam. I say that all the time.
America is a scam. Amen.
Stuff that is free. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right?
That just exists on the planet. And capitalism and white supremacy decided that they was going to charge us for
working for stuff that is free. For free. Yeah. It is free, y'all. And then 12 white guys decided to own it and gave everybody watches and said, now, y'all, listen to us. And do what we, this is not that podcast, but what I'm saying is like, once you really just like part of that is saying, I no longer have to accept this norm. And that's what I love about your platform. That's what I love about everything you do is that you walk around with a, no, that's not for me. side, like it's invisible, mm-hmm. but it exists. Like, nope, that's not my legacy. Nope, that's not my job. Nope, that's not my business. It's
right.
not my business. So mm-hmm. I would love for you to define for the listeners, if I had to say, what is Black liberation? Tina, what is that? Define that concept for us.
Sure. I think that our liberation means that we are living in our full humanity and dignity unapologetically with joy and with the ability to just be who we are unapologetically. So I'm writing a book about this, which is what the long
go figure.
So it's that it's,
I wasn't sure if I was allowed to bring it up or not.
For sure. And the book is called Are We Free Yet? Because it began as my search for myself as a queer Black woman identifying person on this planet. Where can I go to feel safe, feel at home, and be free? Is there any place on the planet where I can exist in this queer Black woman body, where I can feel free, where I can be free? And so it started out, well, the book is both a personal reflection and a collective examination of the ways that we get free from systems of oppression, such as white supremacy, capitalism, and the patriarchy, while centering our tools for liberation, such as grieving and healing, peace and pleasure, joy and celebration. So when I think about Black liberation and collective liberation, I think about the ability to live every day in our peace and our pleasure, in our joy, and celebrating our humanity. It's that simple. And yet oppression has complicated it, right? We interact with these oppressive systems on a daily basis. And the reality is, when we examine our relationships with these oppressive systems, we should also take a really hard and honest look at in what ways are we upholding and participating in our own oppression. And let me tell you something, there's no joy in racism. There's not. There's no joy in white supremacy. There's no joy in capitalism. And so while being a pleasure activist, which is something I consider myself, I consider myself to be a liberation activist, while I am centering these ways of being as a Black individual in this Black skin, I feel like that is what getting free means, is to embody these things, embody this joy, embody this peace and this pleasure, and celebrating this life. Like, they are ways to resist oppression, that it is a posture of activism. I am going to actively take steps to dismantle these oppressive things in the ways that they show up in my life and in our communities. And I'm going to do it by simply daring to exist, by simply being, by centering these things as my birthright. It's my birthright to live a life of joy and of peace and of pleasure and of rest. And I'm going to go get it.
So I want us to kind of piggyback to, you know, pleasure. And there are people like you. Adrienne Marie Brown has pleasure activism. So there's this bulk of resources that are manifesting, right, that help us see pleasure as indeed liberatory. Mm-hmm. And I want you to expand on that, because initially when I came in contact with some of that language and content, you know, my first thought, my inner Sophia, you know, she's living in there. But like, I think we're often made to feel guilty.
Mm, of course we are. That's
for feeling good, right?
Of course we are, because our pleasure does not serve white supremacy. Our joy does not serve racism. Our joy does not serve capitalism. So it is a part of the indoctrination that we experience coming from being living in a culture of white supremacy, living in a nation that was founded on white supremacy, we have to understand that it is by design that the narrative is that we associate pleasure with guilt. It is by design, it is by intention to maintain all these oppressive systems that we don't tap into what feels good. And that there's a little bit of guilt and shame attached when we feel like there's too much joy, there's too much joy for us to experience, too much rest for us to have. You can ask any Black person, you know, yes, we understand intellectually that we need to rest. And I am grateful for the work of the Knapp Ministry and the Adrienne Marie Browns and the Audre Lordes that have given us this roadmap and helped us to understand the necessity of us getting rest and grounding and rooting in our joy. But the reality is it is revolutionary and radical because it goes against all of the things that have made America what it is, which is theft and brutality and oppression. Like that's what America is. And so for us to live and exist in any way that is in opposition to that, that's a threat to the empire.
And it's so just, I need to stop saying it's ironic. It's more than ironic. It's violent because there's this stereotype that plagues us as being lazy and slothful and, you know, unproductive and whatever those things. But that's not what the receipts show. Right? The receipts across the board, you know, it don't get more hardworking than Black folks from the beginning to the end. And to your point, rest being a radical thing. And I'm learning more and more, Tina, that everything we do is radical in the country that has worked hard, you know, like Black parenting is an act of radical love in a country that never intended on Black people raising their actual kids. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that pleasure part, and when you were talking, it made me think the things that we're allowed, quote unquote, to have pleasure in is still stuff that like feeds the machine. So I'll give you an example. Growing up with my parents, you know, Christmas time was a beautiful time, but it was stressful, right? It's like making sure that you know, give everyone what they want and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that's bad. So let me just full stop. Mm-hmm. If parents are like, I want to give my kid 15 bites, do that, right? But what I am saying is the things that we've been allowed to see as joy giving really still feeds capitalism. You get what I'm saying? To the extent that Black parents have been like, almost like Christmas becomes like this rubric of how much do you love your kids? And Black parents go, like, first of all, Black people in the United States are the lead consumers of at least three industries: sports apparel, the beauty industry, I think film and television. We're the major consumers. So we're encouraged to consume in those regards because it feeds a larger machine. But the things that are organic to us, like, you know, hiking or surfing or rolling a blunt or, you know, like things that don't make Jeff Bezos a millionaire 10 times over, or well, he's a billionaire, right? Those are the things that are frowned upon, you know? And so I just want to point out that the things that society does say is like recreational for us, right, comes with its own cost a lot of the times.
Does, and this is what I mean by we have to consider how we uphold these oppressive structures ourselves, how we perpetuate them. Another example is this narrative about how our rest has to be earned. Like we can only rest after we've worked so much, right? And that whole lazy, the whole term lazy, I struggle with right now, to be honest, because yes, what you said, who's more hardworking than Black folks? We could start there, and also we don't have to work to have inherent value in our humanity. So it's just a word that I reject And because I think there's so much more, I think it's complex, right? And there's so much more there. But again, looking at and considering the ways in which we are doing this to ourselves, this is a narrative that's out in not just mainstream society, but we share it back and forth in our communities, in our homes and families.
I mean, Black excellence, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Has happened at our detriment, right?
Absolutely.
Black capitalism, that's the whole, like all of these things.
And we can be excellent. And that's the thing, we can be excellent. We are excellent. And even when we're not being excellent, we're still worthy. Even when we're not, you know, being the number, the first Black person to do X. Can we, like, help me even understand how it's 2022 and we're still, you know, recognizing the fact that we are still the first in so many different ways. There's still so many firsts to happen. But also, if I'm not the first of anything, I still am excellent.
Look, don't get me started, because see, now I'm about to preach. If I don't do nothing else.
If I do nothing else.
I have been excellent. I'm deserving of love. I'm deserving of rest. Yes. And to say, honestly, and I do want to be clear, I think that's for all of humanity, right? All humans.
Absolutely.
Versus
absolutely.
Whatever your social, racial identity are. You have been created, and that is enough. But the trifecta of evil has us conditioned to think that only 12 super powerful rich white men deserve shit. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the rest of us have to work tirelessly to earn the things that they get access to freely. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't want to, like, again, I didn't mean to like make this about like the Jeff Bezos of the world, but this is what was really interesting about the Trump presidency to me, is I feel like it was like a magician showed the tricks. Mm-hmm. In a sense that
we got to see behind the white supremacy curtain,
the smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. Wait, y'all ain't all excellent? I thought that the reason why there had only been one Black president is because all you white guys were just super smart and super brilliant and super creative, and that's why y'all got all the jobs and lived in all the nice neighborhoods.
We didn't think that.
I thought y'all were great. And then this presidency revealed that, oh, actually, what we always knew to be true.
Always knew. It just didn't get more mediocre. Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Anybody else, including my 5-year-old niece, probably could have been. And I mean, I don't want to make this about politics, but what I'm saying is, that's what I'm saying. Like, if it is good, if they can be mediocre and still expect best things. And so I was having a conversation with someone in 2020 where I said, you know what Black excellence is for me? It's me being able to show up however I show up. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. So if I come giving you 100%, we having a good day. But if I come mediocre as hell, we still having a good day. That is what Black excellence is to me. I could be as mediocre as the next white man, and don't nobody tell me a thing.
And be celebrated.
And then I'm going to show up to work and ask for a promotion on top of that. I ain't do shit for this whole quarter, but yes, can I get a promotion, please? Thank you very much. Yes, I'll take that quarter office. And I don't have to work 300 times more than anybody else up in this joker for either. So that's what I'm saying. I feel like we need to shift our focus on what that liberation project looks like. It's not about me working more, doing more, extending myself more. It's about being able to fall the hell back and don't nobody ask me shit.
Amen.
And I think having people like you in my community has helped me see that. You know what I'm saying? That I don't have to be grinding. We don't have to be hustling to have and attract the things that are good in our lives.
Who's ready for some Black history?
This is your Black History Moment.
Black history is made every day. It's not just something that happened one time. is so much bigger than I had a dream. What happened on bridges? You know what I'm saying? We are Black history, Tina. And yeah. So I always like to have a moment where we talk about the Black history that is happening right now, but make a point to also acknowledge our ancestors. Mm-hmm. So at the time of this recording that Tina and I are having, we are getting ready to walk full on into February, Black History Month. And so what does Black History Month as an artifact of Black history mean to you, Tina?
It is like a month-long Black-ass family reunion. You know, I was thinking about this earlier and thinking about, like, what are my feelings and my connections to Black History Month? And I think the first thing that comes to my mind is being a little girl and all of the programs that we did in particular during Black History Month at church. I'm specifically speaking to church. I'm not speaking about school right now. I'm just thinking about how much fun it was and how even as an adult, one of the things I look forward to the most is learning. I still look forward to learning Black history shit that I didn't know, because even at 44 and even in 2022, at a time where critical race theory is under attack, and learning about the truth of the nation's history of racial terror, anti-Black violence, like, we are still looking at history and learning. There's still so much to learn. And I do love that. And I love that for Black folks, we just take everything to the next level, right? So like you said, it's one thing to be Black and celebrate being Black every day, because that is what we do. It's something absolutely for us to be making Black history every day, because that's what we do. But the month is like a whole, like a Black ass house party. Like, cause we just out here just being fully, you know, uncomfortably Black in front of all of the white people and all of everybody, you know what I'm saying? Like, not uncomfortable for us, but for them. Like, this is when we just be, you know, we're wearing our superhero Black costumes.
Look, I told somebody that I was talking to earlier today, I mean, Black History Month is my second Christmas, right? I just love it. It's so, like, yes, I get to do all the Black shit. First of all, like, you already know I'm all about Black shit all the time anyway, you know?
And you are, yes.
I don't need February for me to, like, be like, let me jump this fact about enslavement. Because I don't know what to do. It's like my superpower. Like, I can make anything about enslavement. I'm like, Lord, like, it's not, it's not a game board, but shit. Like, I'm like, what about slavery? So it means a lot to me. And this particular Black History Month, I'm negotiating, like, what I need, again, by the time people listen to this podcast, February would have passed, and I'm calling in Black for the month of February, because I wish that Black people wouldn't be doing the labor that they will do this month, right? So there's all this invisible labor that will happen for a lot of Black folks. You know, there are people who will go to work and the boss will strongly encourage. Why won't you tell us, Keisha, about that time you were in traffic and got stopped by a cop? And depending on who Keisha is, she might share the trauma, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, damn, Black people are probably going to work harder in February than they work most of the year. When really, this month should be, like, to your point, about our joy, about our storytelling. But so many people are going to still make it about trauma only. Mm-hmm. And so I just was like, you know what? I'm not going to do on Aretha Franklin's internet. Is this month, all the months, I deal with white shenanigans. But this month, I'm going to pull back as much as I possibly can to give my space for joy, rest, and ease. And
I feel like that's the theme right now. I feel like that's the theme. I don't know about you, and maybe I'm cultivating this because that's what I'm attracting it, because that's what I'm giving off. Yeah. I just feel every day more and more like Blackness is joy. Joy is Blackness. And they just feel synonymous. So I feel like we're walking into this Black History Month just with a different energy. Like we're coming with the unapologetic Blackness, the this is who we are in celebration of our Blackness. And it so there's going to be conversation and learning to be had, a conversation around some of the history, right? And we can, I love that you can always turn a conversation back to slavery. Like that's real for us, those of us who were brought here, who are descendants of enslaved Africans, like that's real. And also we get to feel that. And I remember, I guess maybe a few months ago, what began something I saw a message I started to see circulate on Aretha Franklin's interwebs is that my history as a Black person in this country is not just about the trauma that I and my ancestors experienced. It is also about the resilience. It is also about the joy. It is also about the overcoming. And I just feel like we're in a place in 2022 where that's what we are leading with.
I think like one kind of like seal the deal question here, Tina, is how do we get from, you know, I'm imagining, you know, someone who's got three jobs right now, hustling, doing all the things we just talked about, hustling, working hard. Because I actually saw a TikTok of a Black man recently. You might have shared it on the Speaking of Racism page. That's like, I got three jobs. This is some bullshit, right? I'm working super hard and still my life is not manifesting my dreams, my pleasure, my joy. Mm-hmm. So if you had to, I mean, you're writing this amazing book, but if you had to say, what's the first step for a Black person to take to move in the direction of joy and pleasure and rest? What would that first step be?
I have so many things I want to say, but I think the first thing that is really coming up is we got to heal. I think we have to be really intentional about gathering together spiritual practices that are going to allow us to sit with ourselves, going to allow us to be still and really take inventory about what is keeping us from being able to feel. What is keeping us, because whatever is keeping us from being able to feel is the same thing that's keeping us from being able to experience joy and pleasure. Ooh, and when we're Lord. Able to tap Ooh. Into our joy and our pleasure. And so, see, this is, I was going to say theology from like Audre Lorde. This is that liberatory practice in how we employ joy as a strategy for revolution, as joy as a strategy for liberation. Because when we can experience joy, when we can feel that love, when we can tap into our need to grieve and heal on so many levels, we can begin to imagine ourselves free. And I think that's it's this imagination. It is not, I don't have the, and I want to say this also, the book is not going to tell anyone how to quit all three of their jobs that they are doing. That's the thing, is that I can't tell individual people how to chart a path for liberation for themselves. Because I think that's actually the answer to all of our justice work, is that there are so many ways to get free. There are so many ways to approach and attack, if we're going to use more of an offensive term. There are so many ways that we have to figure out how to dismantle these oppressive systems. And that is both collectively and it's also personally, individually. And so that's why I say the first place I would recommend people start is healing. Because we do have to heal from these systems. And sadly, while still in them. So there's an element of grieving that takes place as well. It is acknowledging that the ways in which society has required us to be these producers, to be these laborers, back 400 years ago, as well as today, the fact that we in America are living in a society that continues to demonstrate to us and to show us that our Black lives don't matter. The reason that for us to even be able to say that Black lives matter is an acknowledgement and an indication that we are not free. If we were free, we would not have to be speaking and going around attempting to persuade and convince anybody that our lives matter, because they would just simply matter. And we wouldn't see what we have seen in the case of Breonna Taylor. And you and I wouldn't have to be having conversations like we do about the Black women that are killed by the police state. We have to always be lifting up their names. And these are things that we need to be grieving. These are people that we need to be grieving. And there's an acknowledgement that, yes, we have experienced Black trauma on levels that we never should have had to. And we are still experiencing these traumas on an ongoing basis, right? So in what ways can we gather to ourselves spiritual practices? In what ways can we support and love one another so that we can grieve and we can heal and begin to imagine ways to get free?
That's good. That's good. I'm going to answer my own question, or I just want to add to something. Part of my healing process has been to recognize the anti-Blackness that lives in me, right? Because the truth is, I can sit and I can tell you how the Fed is anti-Black, that the police state is anti-Black. I can name those things. But what has really moved and motivated me is seeing, oh, this lives in me. Mm-hmm. And so in getting that out of me, the junk, that, and it's a hard, tough, it's easier now, right? Because now I'm like, oh, okay. I feel like I'm just like, it feels like there's this backpack that I'm in, like all the time taking rocks out. Like, oh, got that out of me, you know? And an example of this is like time. I've changed my relationship to time. I thought linear time was some legit shit. And I'm like, oh, damn, this is some stuff that white people came up with. Okay. So I don't have to value myself against that, right? But I'm going to tell you, like, I'm late for the meeting. I'm a bad person. I'm not on time. I'm a horrible person. I'm not, you know? So that lives in me. And so that's another thing I just want to add, that you have to really, part of what makes this hard is you're like, shit, I've co-signed. And you said that. I've co-signed. I've replicated. I've reinforced that. And so when I tell you Black people doing ratchet shit makes me happy. I'm like, and we still here, y'all. You get what I'm saying?
We're still here. Yeah,
and we still here. So that's, you've heard me say this all the time. I ain't about to police Black people in an anti-Black world. I mean that. I mean that with my whole heart.
However we show up, and that's a thing for us to grieve. I'm really glad that you emphasize that more. We do have to grieve the people that we were before we understood that we were perpetuating anti-Blackness as well. That person that we used to be, the truth is we assimilated to whiteness in so many ways for survival. So when we have this racial awakening, however we get to that place, however we get to that point where we acknowledge our own internalized racism that we have to root out and we have to actively work against, there's a grieving that needs to take place for who we were when we were doing what we had to do in a white supremacist society to survive. And that's another place in our hearts that needs to be healed. So we just, that's another reason also I love that you are so, you are a supporter and proponent of Black people, even in the face of when we experience and express anti-Blackness. Like to make an intentional decision to not police Black people in the ways that we show up, that's something that is intentional, and it's also giving a lot of grace, right? Recognizing that we do have trauma upon trauma upon trauma that is piled on, coming from so many different places. It's so layered. There's so many levels to it. So when we're able to extend grace to ourselves, recognizing that we've done exceptional. We've done so well with what we have that at a time where we are choosing to reflect on ways to get free, we need to show up with an intention to grieve, an intention to heal, and to do so with a lot of grace for ourselves so that we can extend that grace to others.
Tina, you've done all the things I can say this on the podcast. I've said this to Tina a lot, that this book is going, the energy that this book is going to give people, this book is going to get people delivered. It's going to get people fulfilled. I mean, this book is going to do more than the Declaration of Independence ever did.
Listen. And that's really what you just said is what we need. We need to write our own declarations of liberation. Go. That's in the book. And yeah, that's what we got to do. That's the point. Getting to a place where, Kina, you can write your own declaration of liberation. I write it for myself. We write it for one another, for each other. And then when we get free, what do? Toni Morrison told us we go and get other people free.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I'm excited. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. We out here. We out here in February, March, April, May, June.
All the months. That's what we want. All the months.
I love you so much. Listeners, y'all are going to connect with Tina on the book that's coming out. Check out the show notes. Tina is she's the owner, the CEO of Legacy Trips. Just Tina does all these kind of things and is sexy as hell doing it. You need to see my sis on a surfboard.
Yes. Yes. I want everyone to see that picture. Yes.
Thanks for listening to the Please Say Black podcast. And I am so excited to be your host, Joaquina Reed. I hope today's episode really connected to you in a deep way. And I want to encourage you to check out the episode notes. You can find out more information about me, how you can support our podcast, and of course, find out more information about our dope guests. Lastly, make sure you follow us over at Instagram at Please Say Black. I want to leave you with this blessing from our tremendous ancestor, Malcolm X, that says, I pray that God bless you in everything you do. I pray that you will grow intellectually so that you can understand the problems of the world and where you fit into it, into that world picture. And I pray that all the fear that has ever been in your heart will be taken out. So, stay black, and be blessed.
Now, if you don't mind, I would like to get a little rest now.
Catch y'all next time.